And it's a great morning once again, 15 minutes after 10 o'clock. Time for the Capital Gang. My name is Kale Moses, very temporarily sitting in for Oscar Semweya, who he says he's caught up in the worst traffic jam of his lifetime. But he should be here in maybe about 5 minutes. And since we already have a guest in the studio, Mr. Joel Senyonyi, who needs no introduction, it's obvious we can get started on some of the big issues that have happened since Oscar already gave me a background of what you guys will be dissecting today. Good morning, Mukulu Senyonyi, Joel.
Good morning, Moses. How are you?
Well, I've been better. These are very big shoes to fill in, even for a little while.
There's always the first time for everything. So shoot your shoot,
hey, as they say. Okay, all right.
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you. I hope you're well and the listeners too.
All right. You. Well, let's start off with some of the big issues that have been contained in the week. I think the biggest being Uganda suffering a setback. Tourism has already been suffering with the recent scandals. They were embroiled in UWA and everything. Now the tourists getting killed in cold blood earlier this week. What was your take on that?
Yeah, it's problematic whenever we lose a life. It's even more problematic if it is people that have come to visit us. You know, they've come to pay their dollars and spend some time in our country and go back home, only for them to die here. It can even be a diplomatic, you know, lead to diplomatic crisis of sorts sometimes. Tourism generally, for starters, I send my commiserations to the family of the tour guide. A young man with great dreams and ambition. I was seeing his mother talk about his now deceased son. She had a lot of hope in him. He was ambitious. He was all out to make it happen in the tourism circles. Unfortunately, he died in this catastrophe. And then the two tourists, it's very unfortunate. I don't know if the bodies have been repatriated and all of that. So there are two angles to this, in my view. One, of course, the tourism bit, which we'll talk a bit about. And then the terrorism as it is being told to us. Yes. You know, nowadays, whenever people are killed and so on, it looks like ADF is the easy excuse. You know, even before they carry out any kind of investigation or whatever, it's as if they, very quickly, this is ADF. I'm thinking, did you plan with them or what? I don't know. So how quick it is, that very quickly it has got to be ADF. But anyhow, that's the story they're telling us. You see, tourism has got a lot of potential in this country. Okay? At some point, especially before COVID, it was the largest foreign exchange earner. Things have been a bit unstable since COVID-19. Before COVID, tourism was directly employing about over 600,000 Ugandans. Yeah? In the tourism industry, generally, from the tour guide, from, you know, guys who put up facilities and all of that, directly. But then, as you know, there are many others that eventually benefit indirectly along the chain.
Yes.
And so COVID-19 came, hit us hard. There were no flights. There was not much happening. And things kind of dipped. We have been trying to pick up, but again, with numerous challenges. Tourism is like a low-hanging fruit for us, Uganda. Yes. Because, you see, we don't produce much. You know, we are not like some countries which churn out lots of products. We as a country, we import about twice as much as we export. That's what our balance of payments look like. We do not produce much. Even the Ugandans that keep trying to produce much, we are not aiding them. That's something that I'm always bothered about. You know, our people who are trying out this and that, heavy taxes and so on, the environment becomes complicated for them. And yet elsewhere, the countries that we admire, the Chinas of this world and so on, whose products are flooding our markets, it's because their government has decided, let's incentivize these, our local producers. So they'll give them tax incentives. They'll incentivize them in various ways to make it a bit easy for them. That's why, Moses, when you go to a supermarket and you find two products, one Ugandan, one Chinese, similar products, the quality could even be the same. Let's keep all factors constant. The Chinese product will be cheaper. Why? Because the cost of production for that Chinese is lower. the cost of production for the Ugandan product is a bit high because this guy has to break even. So you'll have factor in everything, you know, rent, taxes, electricity tariffs that are high and all of these different things. So for that Ugandan fellow to break even, their product will be a bit higher. But you're also being practical. You're saying, look, the disposable income I have is not much. So you're going to buy the Chinese product, not because you're not proud of your country, and I keep hearing them say, boo-boo. You see, boo-boo, buy Uganda, build Uganda, be proud of your products and so on. People are being practical. If the money they have is less, they'll buy what is cheaper. So let's begin to incentivize Ugandan local producers. We get excited about foreign investors. We give them tax waivers, free land. Then we even guarantee them money, and many of them turn out to be chiwanyi.
Indeed.
Bafere. As it were. So anyhow, I think that there's a lot we need to do to bolster our tourism, because there's a lot of potential. Do you know that Rwanda does not have even... Maybe their gorilla population is about a third of the gorillas in Uganda. But the world thinks gorillas are only in Rwanda. But then some people take flights through Uganda to go to Rwanda. You know? To see gorillas. Why? We are not doing adequate marketing. Yeah? Of course, then disasters like this get to happen. COVID-19, you remember Ebola.
Yes.
Mubende and so on. Many tourists were scared because they're thinking,
one thing after another.
You know, even if it is just in one district, inevitably they will stay away. So you have been battered by COVID-19. Then after that, there's districts that have Ebola. So all of that affects the tourism industry. Now there's this, as they are calling it, a terrorist attack. That's even more scary because it was directly targeted and it was very brutal.
It really
imagine,
was.
You know, I saw that car in flames and how these guys were brutalized. Any tourist would fear. I have some friends who are, you know, tour operators and so on. They've told me guests are canceling their orders, and you don't blame them because they're thinking, wait a minute, how safe is it?
Yeah.
So we need to quickly fix that. You need to show that you are in charge. If it is terrorists, okay, so... What are you doing about it? How certain are we also?
How can we fix that?
And for me, it takes serious leadership again. Yeah? So yes, we are quick to say it is terrorists. So what are you quickly doing about it? We went to Congo to flush them out. Are we flushing them out of Congo to come back here and so on? Bottom line is you need to instill confidence. Yeah, there are killings in some of these other countries, but they come through and show they are fully in charge on top of the situation. And so... there's a semblance of normalcy. Here, I don't know, Sam Seveni, you know, comes through with a speech and so on, says, we are going to come for your heads. We are going to deal with you and
animals,
so on. The same usual tough talk.
Nothing gets
but
done.
I don't know that it instills confidence ultimately. But a couple of other things that we need to do, in my view, to fix tourism. Yes, there's these disasters, COVID, Ebola, and now this tragedy. I've just talked about the marketing. Rwanda does intensive marketing. That's why people think gorillas are just in Rwanda. We have plenty of them here. Plenty, plenty, plentiful. Yeah.
Way more actually.
We need to do a lot of marketing. I read a statement somewhere, Moses, I don't even know who it is attributed to. They're doing business without advertising is like a man winking at a woman in the dark.
Oh.
Zero results. Eh? You're doing a lot of work, you're winking, but it's dark, so the other person cannot see what you're doing. And so that's the same thing here. We have a lot of potential. We don't do much advertising. When we try our hands on it, again, it becomes a disaster. You remember when we hired a company, paid lots of millions of dollars.
To save face.
You know, but again, it was riddled with corruption. So even when we are trying to do the right thing, it ends up being engulfed in confusion. Those are things that we need to fix. One final thing that we need to deal with. We've got political challenges. And these, they scare tourists as well. When these guys see the brutality being meted out on people that are opposed to government,
yes,
it's problematic. They're thinking, will I be safe there?
Insecurity.
That's I'll give you one classic example. We had our countrywide tours. They were uninterrupted. They were peaceful.
Yes.
You know.
On the most part.
News was only here locally. And yet they were... thousands and thousands of people that were coming out wherever we went. But the other day when the Honorable Chagulanyi came back and he was arrested the way he was at the airport, BBC reported about it, Al Jazeera, CNN, Reuters, AFP, all of them reported about that incident. None of them reported about our countrywide tours that were massive.
Yes.
So that should show you what you need to do and what you need not to do. Leave people to express themselves, for heaven's sake. You know, political party that is registered, let it be out there exercising its right as a political party. When you come after them, you are also, knowingly or unknowingly, you are hurting tourism. All of these are things that we need to address. Sometimes you think, okay, I'm trying to deal with the situation. Like I've told you, none of those media houses reported about our massive countrywide tours. But each one of them, CNN, Al Jazeera, BBC, Reuters, AFP, and several others, I'm only talking about the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
They reported about that arrest as it was. Why do you harm your own country? So these are things we need to critically think about and address if we want tourism to work. And it has potential to work.
Wow. Okay. Well, Mr. Senyonyi, furthermore, let's talk about what happened this week still in Parliament.
Mm.
It was a bit of a big deal. 5 members ended up being suspended for 3 sittings. And they said this was on the most part, because opposition turned rowdy. I don't know how true that was. But from what we gathered, maybe you have a better picture.
Mm. Okay, now I see we're jumping to the next topic. Just before, one other final thing.
Oh, you wanted to conclude.
And the listeners need to know I'm here alone so far.
Mm.
I hope, you know, the other colleagues will join us. I'm told there's troublesome situations with the Northern Bypass and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We also need to, regarding tourism, because like I'm saying, tourism is a low-hanging fruit for us.
Yes.
Because we have got it all. Yeah. God given, we've not had to work hard to have it in place, yeah?
Animals in plenty.
So, and on all these tourist sites and so on. So, we also need to build facilities deliberately, very deliberately. Roads, for example. Many of the tourism roads, I will call them, to national parks and so on, a number of them are in bad shape. You've got to fix that. You don't want a tourist coming here and they're spending hours, if not days, on the road trying to access a game park. Because you see, when these guys get, you know, days off to come and visit a country like Uganda, they will have like a week, maybe 4 days or whatever, to come and relax a little bit. You don't want them spending 2 days dealing with the road situation, you know. There's a time then Minister of State for Tourism, I don't know that I was joking, maybe he thought he was joking, but it was not funny, Chiwanda Subi. There was an incident where tourists spent a day plus on a bad road, cars got stuck and so on. And he said, you know, as journalists put the question to him, I think it was at the media center. He said, yes, that's part of the tourism experience. If he was kidding, it was not funny because tourists don't come for that. They want to come, get to the game park as quickly as they possibly can. First of all, the game parks are far. You don't have them nearby here in, you know, in Kampala. It's not like Kenya. And some other countries, you land and as you get out of the airport, you are in the game park. Yeah? And so they have to travel far, make it easy for them because they don't have many days. You don't want them to find it uncomfortable to come here. You want them to come back and to recommend to others, you know, that it's a great place you can easily access and so on and so forth. Mwalimu, you are welcome. I'm now the one welcoming you.
Thank you, Joe. And yes, you're the one welcoming me to the show.
<It's> Sorry about what you've been trying to deal with.
Yes, congratulations to Mr. Moses Karule.
You need to be careful. That man looks like he might take your job. Don't give him another chance.
No, you know me. I always like to give chances. I never believe that I'm the only one with
as
vision.
A teacher, you empower others. Yes. Good stuff.
Must make sure that I empower others. So you've done really well, Moses.
Kudos to you. He's done an incredible job. We're talking about tourism and the challenges.
Yes, before we continue with the tourism talk, what you are saying exactly. Because the Northern Bypass, listeners, if you're coming to the Northern Bypass from Busega, the junction between Nansana and Bwaise is being worked on. It's been narrowed down into one lane. I talked to UNRWA PR, asked him, why don't they put out this information early? So that people have choices, because it's now a real mess. Mm. Abdul Katuntu is in there.
Moses Biaranga is also there
in there as well. And a lot, many other people going. It kind of works to advantage if a show is started and ongoing. But people need to know, just as you were talking about the tourists. So listening to you, Joe, from this time as a radio listener, as I drove in stuck in that traffic. I thought, wow, now if NRM were to catch a good voice like yours, and and if you'd been stuck in the studio on your own and you're an NRM person, I'd be feeling really okay. But
Alan began to hit so hard, don't worry.
But being on your own in the studio as an opposition person, I was not sure who was going to unleash what kind of tear gas against you. So you can imagine the worries I had as I drove in. But yes, I agree with you entirely. There was an article this week by Kalinaki saying, yes, we have to be patriotic and we have to imagine those things you've talked about, that you should not portray Uganda in a bad light. But at the same time, you're a journalist. Before you became a lawyer, you were a journalist, Joel. You do know that if you don't tell the news and other people get into the same trouble, that can be also worrisome.
Yeah, you know, it can be a bit complex. We used to have government people come to our media houses to tell us these things. Because I was in the media for 14 years. They say, well, you guys, you need to be patriotic and so on. These bad stories. That time it was Dr. Besigye and these people being clobbered day in and out, and so we would broadcast these things. They would say, no, don't portray this, it puts our country's image in bad light. And would say, but look, we're not the ones beating these guys, we only bring our cameras. Stop beating them up, allow them to freely exercise their right, because we are not going to cover it up. And by the way, even that time, journalists were, you know, affected. Of course now it is worse, they are beaten directly, you know. Somebody knows this is a journalist, but let me beat them up. The other time we would be, I don't know, collateral damage or that kind of thing. And would say, but we are also being affected. Yeah, so we'll cover these stories because that's what is happening. I gave Moses an example. I don't know if you had it before you came. We did our countrywide tours. They were massive in every sense. Yeah, but the news was only local here. When the Honorable Kyagulanyi was arrested at the airport.
Before you leave the countrywide, in fact, nothing happened to you until there was a problem. Until you were stopped coming to Kampala, that's when it became newsworthy.
Yeah, a bit of that. But even then, it was still local news, yeah? When the Honorable Kyagulanyi was arrested, the way he was arrested, returning to the country, it was on CNN, Al Jazeera, BBC, Reuters, AFP, and others. Those I'm giving examples of the big ones, yeah? But those guys did not report about our massive countrywide tours. And so one would think, okay, so these guys, why are they portraying a bad image? No, when you do bad, there'll be a spotlight on it. Now the world is talking about Israel and what's happening in Gaza, and we'll talk a bit about that. So, yes, we've got to be patriotic, but again, we're not going to bury our heads in the sand and assume that all is well. Let's deal with these political issues. You know, the other day in Parliament, and we'll talk about that, I believe, you know, people have been kidnapped and so on. When the world hears about these things, these guys also worry. They're thinking, will I be safe coming to Uganda for holiday? Maybe let me take my dollars elsewhere. Critical things that need to be addressed. Let's not bury our heads in the sand. Patriotism does not mean pretend all is well. No, actually, it is being patriotic to say this is wrong. Address it. We don't want our country to look like this. We don't want people being brutalized in our country. We want our country to thrive. We want people to freely express themselves. That's being patriotic.
You expect to protection and everything. So I don't know. I've had before we move on this one, I got a message from Katesh, saying there are other things that worry. For example, some of the photographs that were taken and then circulated. Previously, some tour people were saying, "Oh, I was saying, please, if you receive photographs, I heard you talking about the truck that was burned, and say don't forward them. You know, if you're like me on many WhatsApp groups, and a tragic case like this one comes up, you worry that you're going to get 100 of them."
Yeah, and even professionally in the media, when you're going to show such grisly images, of course, there are grisly images that should not make it to TV. But when you should do so, sometimes you blur them so that, for example, if you're showing an image that has blood, you make it black and white, not colored. So that, you know, one can see it's blood, but it's not a gruesome, grotesque image. But also you warn people that, these images are disturbing, so that one, somebody who doesn't want to watch disturbing images doesn't, you know, either tunes off to something else, or readies themselves. It doesn't hit them as hard, yeah? But then, ultimately, our people, you know, the first people to get to the scene, inevitably they'll take pictures and they do it innocently. They're not doing it in a bad way with bad intention or whatever the case might be. They're saying something bad has happened here. We actually need it to be addressed. So share it as widely as you can for police and the military to come. Because if it is terrorists, as they were telling us, that means they're moving now to the next village or whatever the case might be. So you cannot blame, you know, people who will quickly share these images, those who have taken them. They're saying, we need help, because if these terrorists are here, that means they are coming for us or the locals as well. So you really cannot blame them.
But you think about the people who are on honeymoon, then the next picture. So presumably a week ago they had different photographs, and now these last photographs of them, they were terrible. So yes, to get that limit, you know. There's a Uganda Tourist Lodge Owners platform. Send condolences heartfelt condolences go out to the affected families, and they stand in solidarity with them as they mourn their lost ones, as well as Mr. Aliai, who tragically lost his life in the line of duty. Very sad. So we have now Abdu Katuntu. Most welcome to GANG. Oh.
I'm panting. I'm really sorry, Msomesa, and I'm sorry, the listeners.
Yes, and Moses Fiarohanga, welcome to the GANG. You know, Joe, we're all sharing the same strip of road.
Yes. Yeah.
It's quite bad. It's really, really bad.
I actually thought Moses was ahead of me.
No, he was even behind.
He was behind you, so. Yeah, but Moses, take heart. I have called UNRWA and said they should send out a notice a day early, and the PRO of UNRWA said they tell the contractors to do that, and it is shocking. No, but why but the
not only that, it should be even the timing. There's a time on our Lukuli Road, you know, when trains, some upper areas, the Maram, flows into the Tamaka Road. Now between 7 and 8, you find them moving doing most of the same thing, removing the Maram. And that holds traffic. That's when people are going to office, taking children to schools. Now, one day I had called ED and said, ED, why can't you do this around 10 when people have already gone to offices? Exactly. These days they changed. They do it after 8. When at least when many people, most of the traffic going to school, going to offices, have already left. Yeah. So even here, if they had done it after 10, I don't think to have caused the same traffic mayhem that caused this morning.
I thought those people fear you, but if you do it on your road as well,
it's they have no respect for senior presidential advisors.
No, but they stopped doing it. I told you they stopped doing it when I complained.
Yeah,
on behalf of the public.
I tried to complain when they just unilaterally closed Chigo Road. Do you know the way they closed Chigo Road? Bang! It was one evening you come, you go home, and then you find that you can't go. It's closed, so you have to go around. My producer is showing me a notice by KCCA. And they seem to be doing, you know, should copy cases.
No, that one
20th
is
of October, yes. Munyonyo and Zambia.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, the point they're making is at least there's some notice.
Yeah, but you know, stay there.
No, but you know, should not but you, Moses, really, really get this to.
Moses should not say anything because his man puts his truck on the road and closes the road.
You know, that's actually, initially I thought the challenge is that Mr. Museveni must be crossing over. You know, they close the roads like 30 minutes.
This side.
Or
usually
that kind
it is
of
this
thing.
Side going to Busega.
And people wait for 30 or so minutes. But I was going to say, Oscar, I don't think UNRWA should abdicate that responsibility to just the contractor. Because the contractor is a business person. You're the supervisor. So if they're not doing it, you can't say, we told the contractor to do it. Supervise, make sure it gets to be done, or do it yourself. Otherwise, it's problematic.
I'll also follow up with the ED UNRWA.
Thank you. I hope they're listening. And listeners, I'm doing UNRWA work here. If you are on that road, if you have an alternative route, take it. Otherwise, plan early. So Moses, two tourists dead, a tour guide and driver dead. Very sad.
It's very sad and unfortunate. These are part of the what they call them the kicks of a dying horse. But two tourists and one Ugandan killed, the three, and then the burning of the truck, and earlier week when they also burned the truck, They are very unfortunate incidents. I was talking to some people in security this morning, somebody very senior. And well, with the intensification of the tracking of ADF in Congo, DRC, it need to be in particular because there are two Congos. These are, we have seen the president in the last few weeks, he has been giving updates how many kilometers deep inside they have bombed the camps or suspected camps of ADF after good surveillance. So these are basically running away from the hot fire and hot pursuit within the DRC between cooperation with UPDF and the Congolese forces. And these remnants are coming back this way. So there were some gaps, I think, when the tourists go to the park like Queen Elizabeth, Windy, Mugahiga, which are in those areas, they are escorted by UA after reaching the headquarter, park headquarters and registering, and then within the park they are escorted. But outside the park where this incident happened, they have not been escorted, and that has been a gap. Since this incident happened, the army has taken position that all tourist vehicles, tourists within that area, whether they are in the park or not, they should be guarded, escorted, so that we don't have similar incidents happening in the future. In the meantime, the intensification of hunting for these or any other groups which could be within the area is going on. We're also calling on for vigilance from the population, as the president has put it earlier, before, that when you see somebody in the area whom you are not familiar with, please report to authorities. Security is not only done by the army or intelligence or security agencies. The human contribution, the civilian contribution is also important. Community contribution is also important. But
Moses, do we have the resources to escort every tourist entering a national park?
UA does that when you are in the park.
Yeah,
they do it. But now there has been a gap that when you are outside the park, it's as if okay, you have left your business. So there's going to be intensification of security along the roads within that corridor, in that area, but also at least escorting them to a point when you know here they are out of danger.
Mm.
That will be done. It has been done when you used to have insurgency in the north, they used to escort trucks and buses in between, for instance, Karuma and Pakwach, the bridge. They would be escorted for that place, and it's a very long stretch. So you can have similar arrangements, so not necessarily putting them all together and escorting them at the same time, but definitely the security is intensifying to ensure that the people are secure. They're also improving on the method of tracking the groups which are in that area, which could be moving in that area using more sophisticated means. I don't want to go through them here, but whoever is trying to cause more havoc there, I think they are going to face it rough.
Yes, Abdu, welcome to Gang, Honorable Abdu Katuntu.
Thank you.
Yes, whereas tourism, earlier you heard Joel saying that from friends there have been cancellations, there's local cancellation as well. I can tell you, we had a school trip going into Queen Elizabeth, but the parents are very jittery, you know, after the children have done PLE. You have 20 children, a set of 40 parents. It can be really, really difficult. All of them are calling in to say, what are you going to do? So even internally, it's a problem.
You see, tourism is a very sensitive industry.
Let me first thank Star Cafe. That is Moses Berohanga.
Yes.
Maybe he left home a bit hungry after his exercise in the morning. And he's seated in Ofono's chair.
But so I want to manage Ofono's roar on eating.
Leave my blazers. One, as I was saying, tourism is a very, very sensitive industry. And I really have to sympathize with ourselves. Because there is no tourist who would want to come to a war theater.
Mm.
He sees us to be one. that when you arrive at the border, then you have members all over, you know, this side, and it's like, what am I doing here? So I think we need even to be very, very careful by the sort of security we think we are providing tourists. It could be counterproductive. People would want to come in a very free environment. They are up there. Because remember, these guys are here on holiday. These guys are here to have fun, to relax and so on. You don't want to come and, you know, you have all tanks and so on moving around you. You will not have real, what we call, worth tourists coming here. And yet, even the tourists who have been coming to Uganda, they are not those high-quality tourists. And I'll give you an example. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Bermuda, and it's a very small country, 60,000 tourists a year. But the sort of, and I was telling Moses here before, the sort of income the 60,000 tourists bring in a year is equal to, for us, who will receive 800,000 tourists a year. It's really equal.
If not higher.
So the sort of people who are coming here are low-quality tourists. Of course, those are the ones we can afford. But we need just to improve the condition and even attract higher-value tourists. You can't attract them when you're in this confusion and so on. So, yes, the security has to up its act to make sure that really the place is all pacified. People want to come here, they're on a honeymoon, they want to take a walk and so on, take photographs, and these are the sort of things they pay their little money to come here. But everybody knows, and I had Joy talking about it the other day, a few minutes ago. You see, before COVID, tourism was our number one foreign exchange. Anna, we cannot afford to gamble with it. We cannot. And anybody who is trying to sabotage that sector really should be dealt with the family, and we need to invest the resources. And you know, and this one, even Joe knows that you people in the media know better. Bad news is more publicized than good news.
I was giving him examples, live practical examples.
Yes. Take for example what's happening today in Gaza. Mm. If, for example, 2 weeks ago, Hamas and the Israelis had shaken hands and they had resolved the issue and it's good news, by now it would be off. The news.
Mm.
But now, because it's so bad, you just have to go to the international media. 60% of it is about Gaza. So really, we need to know that whenever we have bad news in this country, our country is portrayed in bad light, but it will be done so widely. All these international news media and so on will be focusing on that and so on. So it's really unfortunate, and our condolences to the young couple who thought they were founding a family and Uganda was a country they would start with to have their honeymoon. It was never to be so to both South Africa and the
United Kingdom. They were young in marriage, maybe not so young in age. But and also their tour guide, but they were starting their new life and it's been crudely ended.
Exactly.
Yeah. I reached out this morning to Charlie, we call her Charlie Bo, Diary of a Muzungu, Nagawa, and she sent me a message saying she had a few hours with guides and tour operators this week. One group was hosting Swiss guests and they continued with their programs. But other guides are seeing a lot of extra security in Queen Elizabeth, and that's very good. And interestingly, Queen Elizabeth has had a higher dose of lions this week, so look at what we are missing out. But Abdu, as Joe said, you cannot allow Moses to get away with it, just like that. Number one, Joe pointed out that how would you have decided that it was terrorism? Wow, try to say, please don't rush to say it is terrorism. Don't rush to say it is Batuju because it affects us. If you can imagine what Amos Wekesa would say, don't rush to say these things. But at the same time, Moses has a contract to protect us. He has gone all the way into Congo and everything, and you know, yet the attacks are here.
The buck starts and ends with him, unfortunately. Then two, you see, I don't know even how to put it, but tourism, Moses, you know, we can't every other time imagine that saying it is terrorism, it is being fashionable. It can't be. Oh, this terrorism. You, to use my
popular words. In half an hour.
If there is an incident
as if they planned with the terrorists.
Allow a little bit of investigation, come with the facts, and then say, guys, from our initial investigation, we found out this and this. Not that it has happened within 2 minutes, this is terrorism. And people don't realize that actually terrorism is so bad. No tourists would want to come to a country where terrorism is, you know, prevailing all over the place. So you need to be a little bit better in your communication. Security should really try to find a way of convincing each and every soul in this country that we've done some investigation. Let us not always presume, yes, it could be ADF, but I want to be convinced that it is actually ADF. Not that immediate it has happened. Where is it? That is ADF. States don't work that way.
Can I make a comment?
Oh, sure.
But hold on. Let Joel make a comment before, and then you can conclude,
okay,
hopefully with some
giving us hope. We need investigation. Mm. Then you communicate.
Go on, Joel. Concluding on this matter.
Yeah, of course I said the bulk of what I had to say before you good people did come.
Thank you
through.
For holding the fort.
I was telling Moses, who was here earlier.
You should thank him for not staying where other people stay.
Did you hear my comment saying when I heard his voice coming out, right? I thought it's a pity he's not NRM. So I was wondering, he's on his own in the studio.
What is he going to say next?
At what time will UCC call me?
I told him I hadn't started to hit hard. I'll keep escalating polar and polar. But look, like I've said, tourism is a low hanging fruit for us as a country. We have not had to do a lot of work to have what we have. Let's not mess it up. Let's do what we ought to do. Avail the infrastructure. I talked about the roads to some of these game parks. They are in such a mess. Advertising, you know. I told Moses earlier on that Rwanda, which
Moses,
has...
Moses Kalule.
Kalule. Who was the earlier sitting host. Rwanda has a population, a gorilla population, that's about a third of the gorillas we have here in Uganda. But the world over, people think gorillas are just in Rwanda. You know, people even fly through Uganda to Rwanda to go and see gorillas the other side. But we have them here. Why? We are not doing what we ought to be doing. Yeah. And lastly, government is sometimes deleterious to its own self. This situation, you know, of now these are terrorists. You've not carried out any investigation. You're not, you just, it's a quick excuse. Not knowing you are actually digging your grave deeper. Because, you see, terrorism thrives on fear. As long as a terrorist, by the way, in this situation, they actually won. As long as you can quickly attribute such a situation to terrorism, they have won. That's why most terrorists, they come out to claim we are the ones, even when they're not the ones. Because it's a plus for them of now, we have caused you damage, we have wreaked havoc. Yeah, so let's not get excited. Let's not be in a hurry. Let's establish what exactly is the issue, but most importantly, fix it.
Mm. Moses.
Thank you and my colleagues in the studio. You see, I don't know, I would expect Abdu, a lawyer and a senior politician he is. You see, terrorism can be defined. And the simple definition here I've just got is the unlawful use of violence and intimidation, especially against civilians. This is from Google Dictionary. So, in whatever circumstances you look at the incident, what happened, it's terrorism, at least as per this definition. You can't escape it.
It's taking now, us to English now.
It's an English word, because if you're using, I don't know, Rwanda word, what would you call it?
Actually, semantics is the word.
You remind me of Wole Soyinka's book, The Lion and the Jewel.
Oh, so you also did some literature like me. Okay, that's aside, but English literature, or not literature in English. So, in whatever way you look at it, it's terrorism. Whether it's ADF or something else, it's still terrorism. Now, if somebody who, and this is not the first time people are targeting civilians, if it was targeting the army or a security unit, a police post, something like that, that could do, still be terrorism, but at least you would say, oh, these people have a particular direction they are taking. They are attacking the government directly, but now, or the state directly, but now they are going for soft targets, and that's the issue of, that's what terrorism. Even then, even when they are robbers, but you see, it's criminality, but still, these are people who robbers, they didn't go for robbing, they went
actually aggravated robbery.
This went to kill and even burnt a vehicle. If they had taken away the truck,
that's what we call aggravated
robbery. And the contents were in the truck. You would say, these are robbers, they are thieves, they were targeting something else. But these people just kill and go. So, you can, and that's the definition of terrorism world over. It's not only Uganda which is categorizing such people as terrorists. I'm happy, Oscar, in some of the messages you read, some people have continued with their programs to visit Queen Elizabeth and other parks. Security, as I said, it has been intensified to ensure such incidents don't happen again. As I said, this morning I was talking to some senior commander, and his message was that, yes, there were those gaps where who are armed only protect the tourists after they have entered the parks and the just at the headquarters when they are with it, that's their mandate. But now they are going to be more vigilance from security forces to ensure that even when they are in that tourists are in that corridor along the roads, they are secure, they are protected, not to have such incidents again. And a lot of their follow-up is being done for these groups. The community is being using more sophisticated methods, as I said earlier. The community is being mobilized to report people they don't know in their area. If they hear certain movements they're not clear about, they should be able to report. And I'm sure, like we happen to have ended the war in the north, this ADF thing will soon be something of the past. As I said earlier, there is a lot of intensification of passport pursuit of the ADF within Congo, and these are believed to be people who are running away from a hot pursuit, but they are armed. So with time and the more intensifying security, it will be done away with, and Uganda will be more secure than it has been before. We had bigger incidents in northern Uganda, but now you hear the place is calm. There's peace in that area, other than criminality of some other forms, but otherwise,
thank you.
Threats from terror in northern Uganda are now gone.
Joel, in a sentence, you'd say Moses really is the one who writes President Museveni's speeches.
Without a doubt.
Because
that's why we say him.
I'm sure he even puts that intonation.
That's why we pay you.
Welcome back from the break. More about traffic jams this morning. You're most welcome to Gang. Namfi. Good to have you. So,
apologies to our listener for my late coming, but like Oscar said, miscommunication and too much jam. Did you find out what was causing the jam?
They were fixing the northern by
why would been we turning fix it to during the day?
Well, anyway, we've already had a go at that. Let's not start again. The only thing is the roads have got to be fixed, but give notice.
Give notice, notify people, find alternatives and timing.
And so on. So, Abdu, Gaza is burning. I was reading up this morning, they are yet to have another meeting. This time, the Palestinian leader, Mr. Abbas, will attend, but Israel is not attending, Iran is not attending. So people think it is futile. And after all that bombing and fighting and everything, two hostages have been released. Out of a suspected 1,200?
Yeah, first of all, really, to any human being, what's going on in Gaza today is heartbreaking. And what has gone on for many, many years. Looking at it like the Hamas terrorist attack on Israel is what sparked off this, I think is being artificial. This crisis has been for a very long time. And in my own view, no amount of force will sort out this mess. No amount of force will sort it out. The earlier the world realizes that this matter should be settled amicably, and we have two people living together, defined countries, the better. Because you see, nobody ever expected that at one time Israel can, in one attack, lose over 1,500 people. Because one, the best intelligence infrastructure in the world maybe is Mossad. But even Mossad was caught unawares.
Totally asleep, embarrassed.
Embarrassed. And some of it, actually, the reaction is that anger. You know, they embarrassed us. Oh, my God, what do we do? So they just now unleash this. What, in my view, also amounts to terror. Because, you see, terrorism, to go back to what Moses was saying, is never a tool for the strong. Terrorism is a tool for the weak. You cannot confront each other with known rules because the other party is stronger than you. The other party is recognized. Hamas is supposed to be an outlaw. So how do you tell you outlaw obey the rules of war? It's not possible. Then too, which the world, especially the United States and Israel must realize, is that do the Palestinian question still remain on table? Is it going to be sorted out by guns? You can't say Israel has a right to exist and it can do anything. Israel has got a right to exist. Of course Israel has a right to exist. Does Palestine also have a right to exist as a nation? Or you are saying Israel is is a first class people and then the Palestinians are second class?
God's chosen people.
It can't work that way. And as long as that question of statehood is not sorted out, we are going to have this problem. And you know, when you see children, you can, in the first 2 days after the Hamas attacked Israel, everybody was saying, can you imagine? Innocent women, children killed. I know you could see people sad and so on. Then the following day, they also started killing innocent children and women. So you just look like Eric Blair wrote. Of course, his pen name is George Orwell. You look when Jones and the other people, when I call them the other people, I don't want to mention the name.
Mrs. Jones.
You look from one to the other, from one to the other, and then you see no difference. Yeah. The other people, I'm sure.
Pig to man and man to pig.
He doesn't want to talk about animal farm in the proper way.
So you see no difference. No difference. To me, I can't see any difference between an Israeli citizen, innocent woman or child being killed at a party. Then I said that is bad. And I see a Palestinian in a hospital being bombed. They say, go to the south. Then they are raining bombs in the south. And it's like, where do you want us to go? So it goes back to the Holocaust. Why did it happen? You know, the other day, Oscar, I was having a conversation with some colleagues. And they say, hey, by the way, why did Hitler do what he did? So it has even resurrected that. Why did we have this Holocaust? Then, what was Hitler afraid of? What did these Jews do? Or what were they capable of doing? And why was somebody so annoyed that he did it to exterminate all of them? So even those conversations are coming back. And you cannot be a state and you don't sort out a problem and you leave in fear perpetually. And the U.S., whether the U.S. has Israel's back, at some point, it will have to break. So this thing about, yes, yes, we can always give them a little bit of humanitarian aid, open it and give them water and food as when you want. If they let them die, then somehow give them a little bit of water and food, but you seize the whole territory. You are not allowing in people to move. It's very, very unfortunate. But really, the United States should act better. I don't think it is looking very good in the eyes of the international world. And what they are doing has made us forget about the terrorist attack of the Hamas.
Yeah.
We are now looking at what they are doing now.
Yeah. They as Joe comes on microphone, he says, Sam sends me a message. Good day, Mukuru Oscar Semuyamsoke. You know, I've been coming to your school for the last 3 days for parents' meetings, and I've been held up for an hour each day in that jam. I also appreciate that Moses was in the jam as well. So
appreciate.
Yes.
Appreciate.
Not the joke.
So
I
appreciate.
Oh,
is it happy?
I'm editing things. He says, I appreciate that Moses was in that jam as well. So maybe something will happen.
You know, the other day,
there was an MP.
Her Highness Robin Anabanja got stuck somewhere in Buhweju.
Oh, yes.
And people were saying, finally,
I
use this tongue in cheek. Okay. She thinks she is Her Highness.
Yes, anyway, Abdra has told you off about her. We have a royal wedding coming up, so be careful about her Highness.
I but apologize. Joe, you know, she carries herself as one, so I'm just so trying to encourage her.
The American President Biden also cautioned them that beware of these revenge things like America revenged with 9/11. Look at the repercussions that have gone on since.
I think that the U.S. has got a big part to play. I hope they do. They got a bit of a win for them yesterday. Some two Americans were captives, were released, part of 200 that Hamas is still holding. But I hope the U.S. doesn't go there in just for themselves. These people need to get onto some sitting table.
There's a Ugandan captured as well, by the way. I don't know if you know.
Really?
One Ugandan is in there as well.
What is government doing to get this person out? Moses didn't even know. Moses.
Those sort of things are not for public discussion in Africa. They don't do that.
In fact, Oscar should not have even brought that here.
If we're saving Moses.
If we're
you need to be patriotic.
That one will let you come on.
Be patriotic. So, Oscar, as of yesterday, 3,700 people had died. That's a huge number in about 4 days, you know, and more are still dying. Yesterday was actually day four.
I said on both sides.
On both, more are still dying. Aid has been cut off. There's a crossing. It's called Rafah.
Egyptian side.
Yeah, where humanitarian aid is meant to pass. As of yesterday, 200 trucks were still stuck there, having food, water, medicine and so on. And that's still the challenge, because you see Gaza Strip, it depends on that aid most of the time. So when you cut that off, they are literally stuck, and as these shellings continue, the deaths could even rise. You see, Gaza is, we are told, the third most densely populated political unit, if you were to consider it a political unit, because you're having 2 million people that are occupying 365 square kilometers. Just think about that. They are packed there. 365 square kilometers with 2 million people. They are so packed there. And so in any shell that drops anywhere, you're sure it's going to hit several people, because they're not sparsely populated. Israel, on the one hand, says, look, Hamas is hitting us hard. You know, they keep throwing shells. Of course, Israel is protected in a sense. They have that Iron Dome system that detonates bombs when they are still midway, majority of them. So there'll be a siren, people will disappear a bit, and then this thing is detonated mid-air. It will cause a little havoc, some of the, you know, debris falling around and so on, but the real thing is detonated mid-air. And so Israel says, okay, now let's fire back. And Hamas sometimes uses human shields, you know, so they will propel a bomb from near a school. Now Israel will say, okay, let's decimate you. They'll hammer. But then there's a school, so children are dying and so on and so forth. So ultimately, in my view, I hope there can be a sitting down over this issue to resolve it. Because when you look at children dying, when you look at women, vulnerable people generally, you know, who are not part of the fight, collateral damage, as they like to call them in military language, it's too much. I hope that ultimately there can be first a ceasefire. Sometimes they'll have ceasefires and then they'll abuse them. They'll say, okay, let's do a ceasefire for aid to cross, and then before you know it, one is sending a rocket and then the others will also retaliate and that kind of thing. So ultimately hopefully there can be a sit down over these issues to resolve them.
Okay, Namfi.
Oscar, anyone who has been following the Palestinian-Israeli issue for the last 70 years will tell you that even the solutions are not solutions. So it's one of those situations where eventually, and this is my thinking, is Israel will have to go away. But really? At what cost? Eventually, I mean, just do the math, do the numbers, do the probabilities. You are a nation of about 14.
It's still around.
It is, and yeah, many nations stayed. The Roman Empire stayed how long? And it still went away. And even Israel before was there, and it still went away. So for me, the cost of life for something temporary, and let's not mistake ourselves that anything we have here on earth is not temporary. Everything is. In 100 years, 200 years, that nation is not going to be there. It can survive even by the odds of it. So for me to see the gross loss of lives, it's saddening. And there is no, so even the two-state solution that is touted by the Palestinians and pro-Palestinian groups, and I'm firmly pro-Palestinian, ultimately Israel will never allow that, because at the end of the day, if you get Palestinians and you let all Palestinians around the world, think about countries like Jordan, where 60% of the population is even Palestinian. Think about Egypt, where a huge Lebanon, Kuwait, most of these people are Palestinians. The moment you create two states, all these people are going, and there's peace, all these people are going to return home, and then you will have 70 million people against 20 million Jews. That is not sustainable right on their borders. And let me tell you, even when the pacifists say, allow the two-state solution, there will be hardline Palestinians who still feel the whole of that land is Palestinian land, and they will never let it go in this generation or the next two generations. A one-state solution will never work, because all Palestinians will return home, and they will just outvote the Israelis, and it will be a Palestinian state. So when you look at the solutions, in themselves are not solutions, and yet people continue to die. The only thing going for Israel is that they have their supreme backer, the United States of America. But the mood is changing there as well. Young people below the age of 40 are not as sold onto the Israeli side as, say, their fathers or grandfathers who are sold after the Holocaust. And even look at the young Jews in Israel itself. When you see extreme right-wingers like Bibi Netanyahu come out and, you know, take these extreme measures, it is because they are facing an increasing pushback from the young people. Don't think that every Israeli who is walking the streets of Jerusalem is on board with bombing Gaza the way Bibi Netanyahu is doing, and his right-wingers who are willing to detonate nuclear. And remember, Israel has 200 nuclear warheads onto anybody who even suggests that Israel it's going to be annihilated. But you see, when the Jews were settled there in 1948, initially it was, the whole idea was the Jews are settled there, but the Palestinians also have room there. That was the whole idea. And yet when you look at the map of Israel in 1948 and the map now, Israel is the next even as far as the Golan Heights in South Syria. And when they pretend that all the terrorists came and attacked us, it's very vicious and very, very hypocritical of them to sit there and say, yes.
You know that Uganda was one of those.
Yes, Northern Uganda was considered as part of the.
So by now, I'm sure they would have been in Uganda here trying to go.
To go as far as Tanzania. And because, I mean, there is. Of course, because there is oil there and gas. But for some reason, this they've always considered their home. And don't be deceived that there were no Israelis in that land before the Jews came, before the Zionists came and took it over. There were Jews living alongside Arabs. Arabs fought on the side of Jews during the Second World War because they've always considered themselves brothers. So when this situation comes and then tears them apart to the point that right now, in our generations, two generations before us and two generations after us, these two tribes are going to be considered enemies, mortal enemies. Yes, maybe at some point in the Bible, in their history, they were. But for a long time, they lived in that same area peacefully alongside each other. They were massacres from time to time. But when you look at the history, Oscar, this is a dead-end situation, whether there is a solution, whether... So for now, I don't... And because of the dissemination of information in this information era, Oscar... It is the reason why we are saying this. But trust me,
X, formerly Twitter, is saying you are in the misinformation. Where does Nafi get all that wrong information about Israel?
No, everyone can read because Georgie. The data is at our fingertips. So George can go ahead and post whatever is right information on our page, and Oscar can give it to us. But the information as I have it, I'm just mentioning facts. When I mention my opinion, it is my opinion. So my opinion, and it remains an opinion, is that even the solutions that we have for Israel and Palestine are not solutions in themselves. When you look at the attack by Hamas, and you talk about the Mossad, and as Abdul points out, Mossad is one, if not the strongest intelligence outfit in the world. For this colossal failing to happen at this time, when Bibi Netanyahu is back into power, there's a question there. Egypt has come out and said, we actually had intelligence that this attack was going to happen, and we gave it to the Israelis. Because you see, Egypt's problem is the same as Jordan's problem. They feel like Israel is creating situations where they can push Palestinians permanently out of their homeland into Egypt and Jordan. And that is why you see Egypt is very reluctant to even open the Rafah border. And that is why the King of Jordan has come out and said, we are not allowing Palestinians here. And that is why the Palestinians who have been told to move out of their homes have said no. Because this is deliberate on their part. They were looking for any reason.
I don't know if they are to bomb this to the ground. It's just that they can't make
no,
it.
No, no, no. You read the comments of the King.
No, that one is right. But the Palestinians, if someone is bombing you, you.
No, no,
because
no! Read their
you don't
comments.
Have ability to go.
They're everywhere on the news.
Because these guys want to force us,
and they occupy it. Because that is what they did before the Palestinians realized what they were up to. You see, all those the settlements where you saw the Hamas attacking and kidnapping people. All that was Palestinian land. But you know what Israel did? They kept on increasing their buffer zone, claiming and telling the international community, we're just creating a zone where for security purposes. Do you know what happened in the 90s? They started settling there. They started building settlements there. So you even when I'm trying to feel sorry for the Israelis, because they're human, and just because I support Palestinians, it's not that I don't recognize that Jews are people who don't deserve all this as it's coming for them. But what makes you, as a human being, go and settle into land deliberately annexed from people who have been fighting for it for years? Isn't that voluntary assumption of risk, as we say in law? So I'm not saying they deserved it, but I'm saying let's think about the fact that they went and settled in land that was annexed from its rightful owner, even by the 1966 agreement and by 1948 agreement. So Israel itself has been coming and breaking the very treaties that they've been signing with Palestinians. So even if Mahmoud Abbas sits down on the table, and let me tell you, Netanyahu is not going to allow him... Abbas to sit down on the same table to agree on anything, because the right wing and Netanyahu know for sure no solution is a solution that leaves Israel intact for the long term. So what they will do, they'll create situations where they can push out Palestinians from the whole region, create a dome, buffer themselves, and hope to live like that forever. Not sustainable.
Well, you have Alana Moti and a Jane who calls herself Calamity. I don't know why I would put your name out as Calamity Jane. They both support and then they're your not research.
They are not God's chosen people. No. God's every one of you is God's chosen people. He doesn't go choosing favorites.
Moses. Mm. Yeah. Israel, Hamas. Hamas, Israel.
I've done a good listening to my colleagues in the studio. It's very tricky situation. Considering the amount of people who have died on both sides, Joel here was saying got about 3,600 or something like that. It's very unfortunate when you see people in Gaza without facilities, basics, especially water, because they have no fuel, electricity is off, they have no fuel to run the generators to pump water. So it's very sad, it's very sad. And
a power that cuts off your water.
Yeah, it's sad, and you have no alternative. You can't go to a well, like here, can go to a well and pick some water, something like that. So there are no wells, it's a dry area. It's a desert. You don't know what to eat tomorrow. So the solution, and you see, if you look at the world in that area, you have been watching on TV uprisings in the Arab world, the Jordan, in Lebanon, and so forth, in support of the Palestinian side. Then the West is coming out to support Israel. So it's not something going to end tomorrow, but the UN solution has been a two-state solution. Mm-hmm. And that has been also Uganda's position, supporting the UN position of a two-state solution where the two coexist. Now, I don't agree with Namfi. Okay, the Palestinians outside the current Palestine, when you offer a two-state solution, they will all have to come back, or the one-state solution, they all have to come back. I'm sure where they are, they are already citizens of those countries, but with that attachment. For instance, the U.S. itself has about 6+ million, about 6.6 million American Jews. They have the attachments with Israel, but they're citizens of America. So even any solution, that doesn't mean that people have to come back. I know many Ugandans who stay wherever they are, but they have that attachment. Anytime I want to go, I can go. In any case, the other day I was talking with one of my Indian friends. He said today, most of the tourism in India, over 80% of tourists going to India, are Indians in the diaspora.
Same as Uganda.
Yeah, so go and come back. So
except
they don't have.
Don't go to national parks.
They don't have to go and stay, and stay there.
Moses.
They come to massacre their villages.
In Uganda, we had the Rwandans here. What happened?
Huh?
In Uganda, didn't you have the Rwandans here? Mm.
Did they return?
What they happened?
Went. Well, but some stayed. Many Rwandans stayed. Many stayed.
These are very nearby. Some of them actually crossed the border.
That's why I was saying not all of them have to go. Some would stay where they are because they're citizens of those countries.
The point I was making is that they need all of them to go.
And by the way, the Rwandans in Uganda.
Someone has replied to saying wishful thinking now.
And the Rwandans in Uganda, we had denied
until
some.
It happened.
Abdu. The Rwandans in Uganda. Some of them we had denied them citizenship. You know it for a fact. They stayed as refugees, not as Ugandans.
But that's
on the side. But
many of them are being denied citizenship. Even today.
So it's unfortunate. But the two-state solution is, I think, the solution for that area to have peace. Otherwise, however much one is stronger. Yes, Israel is a strong country in terms of defense.
You know, Moses.
But a simple thing like what happened, it doesn't mean Hamas is strong. And that's why I said with terrorism, a terrorist attacks soft targets. They don't have to be so strong to overtake and capture land
Moses, first pause for a minute and I get Joel to you. Joel, when your time's in the journalism world, the way Moses is speaking, you can see he's cutting around things. Because they are very much in love with Israel. Pardon? No, nothing to do with US visa. all the gadgets he uses to track the movement of Joel is supplied. Those gadgets are supplied by Israel and so on. so Israel is...
Well, we are...
That's why he's, you know, he's being extra careful.
Until you eventually come back to
Uganda, we are friends to Israel, we are friends to America, we are friends to the Arab world. But that's why I said the position of Uganda, even when...
Israel.
When the president meets these delegates, he tells them the two-state solution is the solution for that area to settle down.
So why isn't your friend
Israel? Now, the issue is this. The UN has passed that resolution, but now implementation is where the challenge is. So the world needs to come back together. We don't think military strengths or security strengths alone would solve the issue. We need a permanent solution where people can coexist through a state of Palestine and a state of Israel. A state of Israel is already there, but now agreeing on demarcation and other people stay on their own.
Mm.
Yeah.
But Oscar, even before you go some other
thing. Yes, in fact, I wanted you to conclude.
International geopolitics.
Seven borders and the two-state solution.
In all this, where is a gentleman called Putin in all this?
He's watching gleefully.
He's watching.
Because now America has to divide its resources between the Israeli war and its attention between the Israeli war and the Ukrainian war. But for the geopolitical purposes,
is it possible he knew it would happen? And is it possible he had a hand in it happening? So,
But it has been said, Oscar,
Abdu has been roving around the world. I think he's forgotten that I mean, people before Bugweri.
So he's now more interested. Oscar, I wanted to explain to Moses why the two-state solution is not just an easy matter, because two-state comes with what conditions? Are you going back to the 1967 border? Are you going back to the treaty that was brokered by the Egyptian president who died? What was are you going because these are terms Israel agreed. Are they going to give back the Golan Heights? Are they so? What's the name of the former
prime minister that was assassinated? Who tried to bring this talk into Israel and
Yasser Arafat?
No. But that Israeli. No, Israeli.
Yitzhak Rabin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So it is not good talk in Israel either.
No, it isn't good talk. But you see, at the end of the day, right now we have the extreme right wing ringers, who are making the decisions in Israel. Have you seen them talk? Have you heard them talk? They are so extreme that I don't even think anyone can talk sense into them right now. And with their military might, they think they have the upper hand. Now they talk these talks of, you know, going into Gaza with their tanks and crushing everything from, you know.
But Africa, let me say this. You see, and it goes back again to the US. Mm. There is a mainstream Palestinian movement, PLO, which had even agreed, had made concessions.
Mm. Yes. But now,
the US and Israel failed to settle
with them.
Yeah. Instead, you had now Hezbollah, had Hamas coming in.
And Hezbollah is elected.
No,
not Hamas, Hezbollah.
No. Hamas won the election
in Gaza.
And that's how PLO.
And how did they win? Because they are saying this PLO is weak.
And then you have to think about now, back in the day, we had weak Arab countries around Israel. Now we have Iran. Israel, America has just given $6 billion to Iran, and I think that is one of the things.
The money wasn't delivered. So let's stop for a break.
That was queried in this whole saga. And Biden kept on telling us that it was for humanitarian reasons. And everyone was telling him, if you would send me to buy money and food, the one that I have, I'll use it to arm your enemies to crush you. So it doesn't
Thank you, Nafi. We're going to stop for a break. In fact, I had wanted us to have a discussion on Darfur because it's far closer to us. And it is far closer to us. And we should be worried about matters African. So. Mm. Maybe, Abdu, you're our expert in that area, if you could prepare. And then next week, we give it some attention with information from you. John in Kampala says, Oscar, I think the grisly photos of dead tourists sheds light on a significant mindset deficit with our so-called social media journalists. Tourism in South Africa is much more violent, but you never see these kinds of photos on South African social media. So let's stop for a break, and after the break, we'll go to Parliament. Okay, stand back. We've had discussion in the studio. Another comment. Namfi is wrong. Mossad is generally overrated. It may be good, but not necessarily the best. But because of the Entebbe raid, they had a long honeymoon. U.S. is a problem in a two-state solution. Until U.S. accepts what Senior Bush, Arafat, and Rabin agreed upon, nothing will happen. More and more blood will be split. Surely you do think, do you think that Palestinians have another choice? Gaza is one huge open-air prison. Anybody who break out, by the way, do not. And it continues. That's Tom in Kampala. So, Honorable Senyonyi, I don't know, sometimes the speaker, maybe they make the wrong decisions, because it has not been so clear to us out here why there were suspensions. And one thing is clear to us, the candidate that will go to Katuntu's committee. And then they suspend usually the wrong people, because Senyonyi not suspended, Semuju not suspended. So you wonder who you know where I work. I work with suspensions all the time, and it is important that you suspend the right people. So
if you have not students,
you have
the ringleaders.
If you had Namfi in Parliament, that one just suspend.
You just don't swear.
You don't. You just suspend. But Senyonyi not suspended. Semuju is not suspended. What's happening?
They play by the rules.
Parliament is interesting. So, by the way, that day, so I
first tell us what happened. Let's start with the W's. What happened?
What happened? What, we're raising our voices over certain critical issues, you know. The speaker looked at me and I knew he was going to mention my name too. Not that I care, because I was also pushing and saying, you see, I have told the deputy speaker before. Another time, there's something we were quarreling about. And I said, the least you can do is allow us to freely express ourselves. That's important. Don't take that away from us. Yeah. This is our space. Let us be able to use it. Don't try and stifle us. You're not, you're part of government, but here you are a neutral arbiter. Please remain that, yeah? Because when you don't do that, you end up confusing everybody. The other day when Chinyamatama and her group messed up the house, crossed over this side and so on, said that they wanted to undress Zake and so on, you know? I said, so, Mr. Speaker, you did not suspend any of these fellows that time. Why now? When for us we are demanding for answers. People that have been disappeared. Nabanja has come out to say, yes, we have these people. They have committed murder and so on. And they're saying it's been 4 years. Their families would want to know where they are. Okay, it's okay for you to charge somebody. But can the family know where they are? Lawyers be able to follow up on these allegations? Because you're saying this person here killed, I don't know, police officers somewhere. Okay, that becomes a court matter. Where do the lawyers start from? And so we are asking for answers and we are insistent on these things. The speaker says, now you're making too much noise, let me suspend. And that's why I'm saying he ends up confusing himself and the rest of everybody. When the others are making noise over an issue which I have said even here is a private matter. Of course, now it's before the Honorable Katuntu's committee. But me, I said, in the first place, it should never have made it to the floor of Parliament.
Mm.
You know that you feel offended by somebody saying something at a party somewhere or social media or whatever, and you're saying, I was defamed. You go to court when you feel defamed. You don't come to Parliament. But now, critical issues that need critical answers on the floor of Parliament, government is cutting around and we are insisting and saying, no, these issues must be addressed. And then the speaker suspends people. I think that's not fair. You not balance things up. You know, what's good for the goose should be good for the gander. But ultimately, whether you suspend all of us, in fact, that day we had said, because it was very clear, the speaker came in the mode to
have some suspensions. We said, okay, he's going to let him suspend all of us. He picked out some. Whether you suspend everybody, these questions need answers. And the speaker should be insisting on those answers. It is not enough that government can keep trying to skirt around the issue. I saw General David Muhoozi saying, we have responded to this issue before. We are not giving any new answers. I said, are you kidding me? But these people are still missing. And then my friend Hamson Obua scored an own goal. So he rose up and he said, you see, the Human Rights Commission has even reported on this matter. And we say, so what did the Human Rights Commission say? That, yes, 18 of these people are still missing and so on and so forth. I said, exactly our point. We are asking for the whereabouts of those people. The Prime Minister has on record, because she hasn't changed that record, said that, yes, some of these people are being held by government on certain allegations. Take them to court. We are not going to keep quiet over these issues at all. Suspend us if you want.
Okay. Abdu, I know the one you will not talk about is the one of Honorable Zake, because now that one has got to come to your court. But you had to postpone because he has now been suspended again. Maybe the continuous suspension will keep him away from your court. But, I mean, how else could the speaker deal with such instances of shouting opposition MPs?
I think the speaker is caught between a rock and a hard place. He's faced with two sides shouting. If colleagues are sincere, they would see this. During the time when the Honorable Chinyamatama raised that issue, the rowdy side was this side. To the extent that they moved, but they didn't come in the chambers actually, but they moved outside coming this side.
They actually crossed the floor in the chambers, Honorable.
Many of them moved to the other side. You know, they were coming from where
Sisi Namuju crossed over. She wanted to fight.
But that was an individual. But the majority of them actually moved in, but they were trying to enter. And I don't know whether it was Semuju or the owner of Mwanga Chivumi trying to say, please, you people don't enter this side, this our side, and so on. But of course, want to cross this side. So you have anger this side, you have anger this side, both sides. And here you are. He has a big responsibility because, see, you cannot afford to preside over a chaotic situation. And what has he done? You need to give him credit. He's had meetings. I've attended one of them where both sides' leadership have been, you know, for almost 4 or 5 hours during. He said, look, how do we handle this situation? The Prime Minister, the Minister of Internal Affairs, the leader of government business, is the Prime Minister, of course, the leader of opposition, the government chief whip, and the opposition chief whip, and some senior members of party. How do we handle this? Because there is an issue which I think somehow we must find a solution to it. But as a presiding officer, what do you do? Do you continue presiding over chaos, or you bring a normalcy to the situation? And that's what he's trying to do. And let me say one thing. I don't know whether, Joel, you had moved out, but the last statement he made, he talked about a lion and a small animal. And he was saying the majority may have their way, but the minority must also have their say.
And that's what we're insisting
you
on.
Get, that's what he said. That was his last statement.
He just said it. He's not practicing it.
Please. I think you need to judge people fairly.
That's my honest view.
Because he was addressing...
As an affected party.
He was addressing the majority. And he has had meetings with all of us together. Not once, not twice. Actually, almost like 8 meetings. How can you say he's not practicing it? You have not attended that meeting. But ask your leaders.
I'm affected in the house.
Ask your leaders who have been attending that meeting. No, they do. I think sometimes politicians, we've also degenerated. We are not sincere. And that's a big, big problem. This man has been having meetings very early, Oscar.
Which end in stalemates.
Yes, but what he can't force a solution. What he wants is to generate some consensus on the way this issue is going to be handled. And that is his job. He can't side with the majority. He doesn't want to side with opposition. He said, you guys, let us now agree. How do we handle it? Then it ends in a settlement. Then it erupts again on the what?
On the floor.
On the floor. And he says, okay, let's do this. Then the following day, he does the same. So I think right
now. Where is Madame in all this?
She's indisposed. Honorable Taiba has done what is humanly possible. But these are very, very difficult times. Because the issues being raised by the opposition is quite legitimate. And I can appreciate why they insist on it. Because if there are people missing, well, actually, to me, it is not whether it is their members or not, but they are Ugandans. I think all politicians should do insist, especially policymakers, where are these people?
Yeah.
There is that one, it's quite legitimate. So, but what a presiding officer has to do is to make sure that you create consensus of debate, because he cannot decide for both of you. That's not his job. And that's what the Right Honorable Thomas Taiwo has done. And we also have the rules that govern us. Mm. These rules were enacted by us. We have not changed them. That's why I don't agree with anybody. And you need to read the Zake judgment about how MPs should behave. We have a code of conduct. It is in Appendix F of our rules of procedure. And let me tell you, the Constitutional Court has already pronounced itself on our conduct. It says you are a member of parliament even when you are outside parliament. So that issue, please stop raising it. If you want to raise it, you have to raise it in the court again. Because Honorable Zake took it there and it was settled. All members of parliament should behave as MPs. Because you see, that's what the population expects you to do.
Mm.
You can't say we behave as honorable members in parliament, but let us behave as rogues outside the parliament.
Information in 30 seconds, Honorable. Please, my insistence has been on Chinyamatama coming to parliament and saying, you have defamed me. If you're defamed, go to court.
You see, the
court is the one that determines matters of defamation.
That one, I
hope she even understands what defamation is.
Don't defame her as well.
No, because she doesn't seem to understand.
Joel, that, second.
Joel, that information, no, I can't get into it. This matter is going to be before me. Actually, it's already before me. So I have no opinion either way.
Well,
because the issue,
but you've given an opinion already.
No.
What opinion have I given?
You have said that we are like the court has said, you're an MP in the house and outside of the house.
That's not an opinion.
So we can already see what the report is going to look like.
Joel, that's not an opinion.
And I think that is the insincerity of people like Joel.
No, honestly, maybe you should have steered clear of this discussion.
No. Let me tell you, I was telling you, I am the chairman of the rule. I'm the chief custodian of the rules. And I'm reminding you of what the rules say. What I cannot give an opinion, I don't know what Zake said. I don't know what Chinyamatama said. All those things are going to come to me as evidence. I have no opinion.
You'll read up on them.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe you know. Me, I don't know. You get it? And conscious.
But you summoned him the other day. What did you summon him for?
But he didn't arrive.
What is he saying? He doesn't know.
He didn't arrive.
Anyway, let me not make it difficult for you, Honorable.
No, actually, I don't think you have the capacity to make it difficult for me.
No, it is difficult for you because you're struggling.
No, really, it's not. I think Joe.
Well, to you, I may be struggling, but not to a right thinking person. Let me tell you one thing. What we do, for us, we are not a court of law. We are an investigative committee. And for us, we don't initiate business as a committee. Business is referred to us. What was referred to us by the House was, let you investigate whether this happened. So, and we got the answer as it is and forwarded it to the Honorable Zake. To say, look here, there is this thing. Please, let's set a program and you come and explain. And we also forwarded it to Honorable Chinyamatama because the one who raised it. And she will come and produce evidence. We don't know. So I don't know what Zake said. And
okay. Let me tell you, that's on the side. And speaking for NAFCA, she'll say all that is time wasting. But on the suspension, Abdul, on suspension of the five, so the way you've summarized it, it doesn't look like you're going to get any business. This is going to continue until the whole parliament accepts that they are missing people.
No. I don't know. But eventually, there will be a point where you have to sit as leaders and address that issue. Because it can't continue like this.
Mm.
Because you see, they're even putting, and that's why I feel sorry when people start really blaming on whatever. When it's like, you guys, why can't you sort it out? Because when that issue was first raised, and Joel should really be sincere on this, he asked all the government agencies involved and convened a meeting. He said, now you tell them. Because some of those issues must be sorted out before they come on the floor.
What's the role?
But you are going on another issue. We are talking about other issue. No, you are jumping on another.
What's the role?
You are just being unfair.
What's the role?
You are politicking.
Abdu, what's the role of a parliamentary... What's the role of a parliamentary commission? What's the role of a parliamentary commission?
It's actually administrative and chaired by the speaker. However... Yes, and even the cabinet. Mm. And some of those issues, when they arise, before you bring them to the what? To the floor.
Mm.
Find a way of handling them. Because like you can see
At the commission level?
No, not commission, actually. No. At the speaker office level. Because you see, once you allow them just to throw them on the floor, you have this case. What is going on? So you must be a leader and take a lead. And that's what Tayeba, in my opinion, he has done. Except that some of our friends are not being sincere to tell people that, by the way, we've been involved in this thing over time. And one other person, I think even the leader of government business should act better, in my view.
Mm.
Should really act better.
This is the Prime Minister.
I think leader of government.
Her Royal Highness.
Mm.
So, because you see... Everything going on in that house, from the speaker, the next point of call would be the lead of what? Of government business and the lead of opposition. And you should always try to have consensus, because you can't continue having a fight, a physical fight, on the floor. That's why, you know, Nafka is saying she's switching off. These are the sort of thing they don't want
Let's go to Nafka now. Have you noted how Moses has enjoyed this discussion
of
two members in the opposition having their own fight? And he has enjoyed immensely.
Well, he's just enjoying.
But go to the microphone.
Doing his job.
Go to the microphone, Nafka.
Defending his people. Oscar, sometimes I wonder why we have certain discussions on this show. And one of them is this. What is the purpose?
Parliament is stuck. You'd want to discuss the Congress or Senate because they don't have a speaker?
No. They also have this problem. Incidentally,
let us discuss ours here.
Incidentally, they also have these problems sometimes. They actually almost come to blows. I mean, it's world over. Parliament's
in their party, they failed to elect a speaker.
Yes. And you've seen the UK Parliament where sometimes it's leadership. But... I think the key thing, I've said this before, we have a crisis of leadership, Oscar. The current, and I think the president calls them fishermen, and even though NRM has fishermen, the opposition does have their I don't know what the opposition calls, their own brand of fishermen. The total sum is that the whole quality of leadership that we have at the moment leaves a lot to be desired. And it starts with, like Abdu was pointing out, the lead of the government business. And then the bar should be higher for the speaker. And once, like Abdu is saying, he's trying to solve the situation, but I get this impression that the people he's governing do not hold the level of respect for him and his leadership that they should. Neither do they hold the level of respect for any other person in that room called Parliament that they should. Ideally, even among leaders, they should be leaders. And at some point, even when you disagree with that leader, you hold a certain level of respect for them, that you take what they say, you listen to them, you stand down, because you recognize them as people superior to you. We don't have that in our leadership, not in NRM, not in opposition, not in parliament. And that is creating a crisis of leadership on our hands. And we are going to have more and more situations where business grinds to a halt because no one is offering proper leadership. And the people being led are not recognizing the leadership. They don't recognize Tayebo as their leader. They don't recognize the speaker as their leader. They don't recognize the prime minister in her role as their leader. So we don't have that person who then says, everybody, quiet. Let's now listen to this person because their role as leader is superior to our role as leader. And then that usually enables business to carry on despite of people's differences. So when you don't have that kind of thing, you will have a situation where now egos clash and the whole purpose of the discussion is thrown out of the window because people now have to assume a certain superiority because it leaves a gap. Mm. And that gap can't be filled. And okay. Then everything
thank you.
Gets to a standstill.
Moses, on this standoff?
Is it a standoff? I think Audu has ably explained the situation in Parliament.
Abdu was doing his job.
And I wouldn't expect him to do worse because, first of all, he has a lot of experience in the House. He's not a
30
new,
years.
He's not a new member. We are still counting. he's not new in Parliament, so he has a lot of experience. And many of our young people coming to Parliament, they need tutorship from people like Abdu and others, the same Jews who have been in Parliament for a longer time. Those rules, of course, they govern Parliament, has a code of conduct, the rules, they govern all MPs irrespective of party, including even if you are a minister, as long as you are in the House, you are an MP. And in any case, you are MP first before even a minister. So you have to behave according to the rules. I'm sure probably that's why he's one of the people enforcing the rules through his committee. And now we must differentiate between the two, about the missing people and the behavior and the conduct of someone on the House. I don't think...
I think you're in Marital Club, there is things like commingling. So for Joel does it deliberately because he's politicking and he has fewer tools than Biaruhanga. But if you go his line, you separate them the way Abdu would like you to separate them.
I want to separate the two. In pause here, I think.
And by the way, I should say to Katunta, and I'll say to him later that I clearly see what the Joes are doing, and I very understand what they are doing.
Yeah, they're asking for questions.
No, they are commingling the missing people. Because that's the only tool they have.
People are missing. OSM. We need answers.
Yes, it's true. We need answers for people who are missing. There's no doubt about that.
Mm.
But also, when you're asking your questions, you do it in a manner or irrespective of an MP. So the two should not be mixed up.
I want us to end. Moses, you see, I had a great laugh. You know, people have been telling Bobby Wine. I'm telling you this, and you're coming back till you finish, even though we are running out of time. People have been telling Bobby Wine that why don't you go and do community service instead? You know, because your people have been brutalized, people are missing. Go and do community service. So I was thinking, I'm waiting for them to write and say, Hamas, why didn't you do community service?
Because we can end the show, Oscar, that.
So the point I'm raising,
they should have done community service.
The point I'm raising is that yes, you need you MPs. They should ask government questions, and the government side should be able.
The MPs should ask government politely. That's what you're saying.
No, to ask questions. There's no doubt.
And we are
in a manner which is allowed in Parliament, but
politely.
Well, in a manner, Abdu is more schooled in that. How would they do it?
The word that governs us as a member of parliament and our rules is decorum.
Decorum. So
it's not polite, but decorum.
So, yes. So, let's not confuse that. It is as if that they were suspended.
Decorum, because Decorum is, I can tell Abdu, I think you are not a very clever man.
Wait.
That's the Quran. That's the one you want. Yeah. Don't tell a man stupid. You say, I think you are not a very clever person.
Absolutely.
or you have too much lack of wisdom.
OSM.
Yeah. That is also okay.
OSM.
Yeah. But I think you.
No one has said that in Parliament.
The Senyonyis are trying to create a situation or an impression that the suspended MPs were suspended because of the question they asked. I don't think that's the issue. They were suspended because of the way they conducted themselves in the House. Not about the question they asked, but about how they conducted themselves. And I think the Speaker was right to do what he did because he also followed.
That's where you're going.
Thank you.
We're saying he should have suspended the NRM MPs.
Thank you so much, listeners. I'm going to allow Abdu a comment, but I want to allow Abdu a comment on the fallen Henry Chamber. And I've remembered that because we have a Rotary, and I'll do a kalango for Rotary. For my Rotary Club, Kampala North, is organizing a singing and dancing competition. I'll take Moses and Abdu to the competition. It's just 20,000. So, Rotary clubs, please galvanize.
Nafka is joining in.
Nafka can only manage Mazina Maganda, but in things. Hey, those ones that she knows. It will be on the 11th of November. But as we conclude the show, Moses, isn't this small, the one you've given us today? What's happening? Are you reducing sizes? Is this the economy? Joel, can you bring this to...
Don't blame the man.
Can you bring it to the floor of Parliament?
Any other ordinary businessman, he has to break even. The branding will remain, but the size has to reduce.
let's use decorum to say there's something wrong with this can of yogurt. It has been reduced.
Since
Nancy was shouting about school fees, I think you need to raise this with Mega Yogurt. But thank you very much, Mega. When Moses is on the show, we have Star Cafe. People have not done so well this morning. Thank you for listening to the gang. I beg your pardon. I promised you a minute on Henry Chamber. Go on, Abdul.
It is quite unfortunate, but I will not mourn Mzee Henry Chamber. I'll just celebrate his life.
Big impact in Rotary.
He's died everywhere. He's died at 84 years. He rose from a pupil civil servant to the top in the civil service, permanent secretary stroke or principal private secretary to the president. He served as a minister in a very, very difficult regime of Idi Amin up 1977. 1986, he served in different portfolios in the NRM government. He served as a member of parliament. Huge, huge, huge figure in the Rotary movement. If you want of any statesperson, any statesman with integrity, impeccable integrity, it is Henry Chamber. Really, he is one of the best, maybe, that has come from my local area, from Busoga. Maybe he's the very best who has ever come from there to serve the country. May his soul rest in peace. We'll have opportunity on Tuesday, I think, for him to lie in state, and we shall pay a tribute to the family, to the people from Busoga, to the Rotary fraternity, and to this country, Paulison.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning into the Capital Gang. Thank you, gangsters on the table. I am Oscar Semoya Msoke.
Listeners, we came late.
Yes, we've done several apologies. And
conclude by thanking this man,
Joel, for standing in
for
on a nearly one-man show.
10 minutes alone.
For staying in the wrong place.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm Oscar Semoya Msoke, and I shall see you next week.